With almost exactly a year to go before Brexit, what impact has the prospect had on London's financial centres? And so far, it's a case of Brexitus postponed. The number of finance jobs being moved overseas by March 2019 due to Brexit has actually fallen, dropping by a half compared to 6 months ago to 5,000.
American defence contractor Lockheed Martin plans to offer Japan a new hybrid stealth fighter jet. The new plane would be based on Lockheed's export-banned F-22 Raptor and the advanced F-35. The sources say Lockheed discussed the idea with Japanese defense officials and will make a formal proposal after it receives permission from the U.S. government to offer the sensitive technology to Japan.
Wembley Stadium, the iconic home of English soccer, could soon have a new owner. U.S. billionaire and owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars, Shahid Khan, is in negotiations to buy the stadium from England's Football Association, in a move that could see England's soccer stars making way for US football players. Under the deal, reportedly worth $1.4 billion, England would have to play elsewhere in October and November because of clashes with the NFL.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It's April 30th, and it's 5:10 in the morning. We're happy you're here with us for another business day and the start of another business week. And here on the Opening Bell this morning, a good show in store for you later in the broadcast. National Life Insurance Day. Are you one of the millions of Americans that doesn't have life insurance? We're going to be talking with Jason Hargroves, the managing editor at insurancequotes.com. And perhaps you can change that situation moving forward. It's also CEO Spotlight Monday, and the CEOs and co-founders of Rapunzel Investments will be here with us momentarily. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, shares are higher in Hong Kong, Australia, and South Korea this morning following the release of reassuring data from China, though a number of Asian markets are closed for holidays. A monthly purchasing manager survey showed factory activity ticked lower, but overall has held steady despite trade tensions between Beijing and Washington. On Friday, U.S. stocks were mostly higher after a wobbly day of trading, and this morning futures are up nearly 120 points on the Dow, 41 points on the NASDAQ. S&P futures up about 10. In Europe this morning, markets are generally higher as well, with the FTSE up about 0.5%. The DAX in Germany is up about 0.25%. And the same story in France as well. Oil is trading at $67.45 a barrel, which is down about 65 cents. A couple of stories we're watching for you this morning. T-Mobile and Sprint have reached a $26.5 billion agreement to combine in a deal that could reshape the U.S. wireless landscape by reducing it to just three major mobile phone providers. The big unknown is whether the proposed all-stock deal will win approval from the Trump administration's antitrust regulators. The two companies have been considering a combination for years, but a 2014 attempt fell apart amid resistance from the Obama administration. The German chancellor says she and the leaders of France and Britain are ready to push back if the Trump administration does not permanently exempt the European Union from new import taxes on aluminum and steel imports. Merkel says she has spoke with the president of France and the prime minister of the UK after returning from talks with President Trump. She says the three leaders agreed that the U.S. ought not take any trade measures against the European Union, which has resolved to defend its interest with the multilateral trade framework. Translation, tariffs on goods coming to the United States, and perhaps even a solid front force against the United States on trade issues. It's CEO Monday, Spotlight Monday here on the Opening Bell, and we're happy to have with us this morning the founders, co-founders of Rapunzel Investments. You may have heard of the Rapunzel app, and Brian Curcio and Miles Gage are here with us this morning. Gentlemen, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
You guys have been all over. I've seen you all over TV and heard you all over radio. You must be very proud. Let's start with you, Brian.
Yeah, it's just been incredible to watch everything unfold and kind of going into all of these schools and then having everyone finally take notice and kind of realize what we've been doing around the city has been really yeah. exciting.
And Miles, you must too be excited, and not only for the popularity and the exposure you're getting, but the fact that you get to talk about the stuff you know about stocks.
I mean, it's truly incredible, just because this is something that has been very important in my life since I was probably 8 years old, and now I'm able to, one, share this information with other students who may not necessarily have the same tools that I had, but they can download our app and, you know, get exposure to the markets. It's very incredible.
For those folks who haven't heard any of those other interviews, I just want to spend a little time giving people an idea of what the app is and what you're doing. So give us a little thumbnail.
Sure. So essentially, what we're doing in the month of April is an investment competition, but the app as a whole is a transparent investment community where students or users are given 10,000 fictional dollars, and then they're able to build stock portfolios, trading stocks in real time as if they were a real-time investor.
And Brian mentioned it was a transparent community, so that way you can see what companies your friends are buying and selling, especially in the age of social media. Young people love to be connected with their friends, and if you're just beginning in the market, you may not necessarily know where to begin, but I can look towards Brian because I identify him as a seasoned investor, and mm-hmm. I can look at his trades and the companies that he's buying in and ask him what drove that investment decision, which in return helps me hone in my own investment philosophy. And that is exactly what's happening with a lot of the individuals who are using the app. It's great.
And that's a big part of the education process, because in real life, we don't know. I wouldn't know what you're investing in unless you told me what you were doing. Talk to us about the importance of that part of the education.
Well, I think, I mean, Miles knows best, I mean, kind of from ACA, I mean, it was just that the learning environment, if you want to be talking with your friends, whether it's, I mean, I think we both knew in college when you're studying, it's like you study in a group, because that way you're kind of communicating about this information. And instead of just learning about it in a classroom, it's like you're talking with your friends about it after school, you're talking with your parents and showing them your portfolio. What we're really trying to do is create that dialogue around investing.
So, and I think the biggest thing for Brian and I, we always had these conversations in high school and, you know, going on to college, we just always thought that a lot of people, we're not a lot of people, but a certain group of people will have these conversations on a golf course talking about their different stocks. And young people, we talk about sports or entertainment. It's like, why is that topic not in our conversation? Why is that not in the discussions? And that's such an important thing, especially because it can dictate what happens in the world or the stability of some person. So we just thought that this was something that needed to be added into the discussion.
You have a based on my knowledge, and you may have a different experience, but there's so many people who have no clue about any of what we're talking about.
Right.
And so that's a big wall to go up against, isn't it?
It is. It's a huge vertical, because people view the world of investing in the stock market as something that's scary. And that's even where the name Rapunzel comes from. Individuals think of the investing world as something that's perched up in this ivory tower and it's inaccessible for most people unless you come from a high net worth family or you have some secret connection. However, we're trying to dispel that notion and essentially roll down the hair and allow everybody to climb the tower to financial success. And we truly break it down, especially when we go into the classrooms and discuss how markets work. And my biggest story that I always tell is the 2008 financial crisis. So when that happened, I was 14 at the time, and companies were not doing well because of the overall macro economy. But these are still inherently good companies. And for me, that was a Kmart Blue Eyed Special. I love using that analogy. So as a 14-year-old, I understand cyclicality. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this is a great time to be buying these companies because they're just impacted by what's going on overall. There's nothing's really changed, and sure enough, they've since rebounded and have done very well.
Yeah, and if you were lucky enough to get in back then and invest in some of those companies, you're probably sitting pretty right now, aren't you?
Exactly. Well, and that's what we like to show kids as well, is just contextualize it for them. Rather than saying, oh, invest long-term or buy mutual funds, it's like, if you bought Amazon when it IPO'd at $19, look at how much you would have now. And, I mean, yeah. You just watch kids go, oh, my God. And it's like, imagine if you were setting aside $20 a day and starting to make investments like that. And just make it more, like, kind of real for them.
Amazon, I think this morning is over $1,000, right?
So yeah.
Almost $1,100 or something like that. Mm-hmm. Is the extent of what people are going to know unless they use your app, what's in their 401k, is that going to be the extent of most people's experience, and why should that not be or be?
That's a great question, and I think for the most part, people don't necessarily know what's going on in their 401k or some of their pensions. They may give it to somebody else, and they may make decisions on their behalf, but I think this allows individuals to truly understand what's driving the returns or what's driving the losses in their portfolio. It's an extra layer, and I think right. It provides additional comfort with understanding how the market goes, because a lot of people want to really become active traders and manage their own portfolios, but are apprehensive with the fear of losing money, and that's to be expected. But this way, you have $10,000 fictional dollars, and this way you can dabble and you can see what your returns or losses would have been had you actually executed those trades in real life. So it's like a test trial, essentially.
Right. Well, and it allows kind of for people to explore. So maybe there are a lot of people that should be buying mutual funds and maybe shouldn't be playing in the stock market with their real money. But it's more to understand the motivations of kind of the actors involved. Like, politicians are making decisions dictated by financial markets. CEOs, I mean, businesses are guiding that way. So if money makes the world go round, it's like we need to understand money. And that's the big thing. It's like you might not be building out a 100-stock diversified portfolio, but following it and engaging with it and understanding how the news influences markets is something that kind of needs to be a universal knowledge.
And that's something that we've also incorporated in our app itself. We have these daily push notifications, and they incorporate current events and what could possibly happen with the stock. Like, oh, well, gas prices are up, so what does this mean for transportation or airliners or Amazon itself? And it helps people think in a different way, because everything is impacted by current events, and it just teaches people how to think like an investor or business minded.
One of the biggest problems for me, and again speaking personally, is I'm afraid to ask questions sometimes. I don't know the answer, and I know this is bad of me as a journalist saying this, but I feel like I'm going to ask a stupid question. How do you get over that hump?
That's tough. I mean, the kids, we don't have that problem. In a high school classroom, there really doesn't seem to be any dumb questions. And we try and emphasize whenever students don't understand something on the app, it's our fault for not building it simpler. But the more interesting part is the teachers and the comfortability that they feel in asking questions. And fortunately, we kind of come in, and with our partnership with Money Smart Week, we kind of have this illusion of being experts, which it allowed the teachers to feel comfortable asking us questions. And that's where we really realized how much for the app to really help students, we also have to work closely with teachers and help them have those uncomfortable conversations to learn more about their own personal finances.
You said you were having these conversations in high school. This goes all the way back then. You were lucky enough to be at a high school where this was taught. What about those kids that don't go to places where they're having these discussions?
So to correct you, it was my elementary school. So okay. I went to Aerial Community Academy on the south side of Chicago, which was founded by John Rogers, CEO of Aerial Investments, and Arne Duncan, former Secretary of Education. But they thought that financial literacy was something that needed to be embedded into curriculum alongside science and math, because no matter what career path you take, you're going to get money and you need to know what to do with it. And a lot of people don't have those tools to be successful after they enter the workforce, because they never were taught how to manage their money. So I think to that point, I don't want to say it is unfair, because I think that's something that should be a part of the curriculum. So it is tough when you have these conversations and people just don't really know what you're talking about. And they're like, wait, whoa, what's going on?
But that's why we're so thrilled that Aerial Investments was able to be involved with this competition we had in April. And so they contributed $10,000, and then Rapunzel was able to match them for our scholarship competition. And it's our hope that kind of to this idea of a lot of schools get a ton of financial education, and then some schools there's no funding whatsoever. And we're really hoping that kind of other community partners in the Chicago area and then nationally are going to kind of step up and provide an incentive for any student to learn about investing without necessarily it having to be within a classroom, because we can kind of have it all
right. Be mobile. And it's so difficult to really transform curriculums that have been in place for so many years, and especially to your point about some people really just don't know about this and they don't know how to teach it. However, we do have this app that serves as kind of this foundation for people to get their feet wet. And while we're only so big. We would love to have more support and have people like Ariel to really believe in the cause so we can roll it out on a larger platform.
Yeah. Let's talk about some things for our listeners now. We'll do a little education. Mm-hmm. Tell us something about stocks, investing that perhaps we don't know. It's a tough one, I know, but...
Or maybe the better
question is, what is the most misunderstood or inaccurate thing people think they know about investing?
I think it's probably... It's more of just the comprehension of the idea of trading, at least for high schoolers. Something that's really kind of a confusing first step is, okay, well, I sell this. Like every other transaction in our lives, it's like we know who's on the other end of it. And so I think a lot of people, even experienced investors, don't necessarily understand the process of what happens when you buy a stock and that you're actually offering a bid for a stock and saying, okay, this is the price I'm willing to pay, and that there's investors out there who are saying this is the price I'm willing to sell. And I don't think, I mean, students quickly get that when you show them, okay, and see this penny stock, it's like, well, there's fewer people selling that, right? And so the kids are kind of understanding things like spreads on liquidity. Penny stocks and liquidity, but putting the names to those, I think there's a lot of people, kind of even friends our age or older, who have been investing that still are kind of like, well, why does this happen? Mm-hmm. And I think that whole the spread pricing has been kind of really fascinating in seeing kids pick it up quickly.
And I think another interesting thing that caught me was people don't understand how they make money on stocks or how this actually works. So it's essentially, I mean, as the saying goes, you buy low, sell high. So you buy at a certain price and then you sell it, hopefully at a higher price. And then whatever that spread is, that's your profit. And then the other way is dividends. And my analogy is it's like a token of appreciation to the company. To investors from the company, which can happen quarterly or annually, and they're like, oh, wait, wow, that's interesting. And then you break down that some companies don't pay dividends, and you're like, why doesn't this company? And you may be like, oh, because that's a growth company, and they're currently reinvesting in the product itself to grow versus a company that's been around for hundreds of years, which is more stable and will, you know, pay those consistent dividends.
We're in the height of earnings season right now. The earnings reports are all coming out. You guys, is this like a holiday week for you when you see all these earnings coming?
We've been talking about this, actually. We want to call it earnings season and do something big for kind of when these quarterly earnings come out. Because
put up a tree with lights on it and stuff.
Exactly. And hopefully start celebrating with presents.
Yeah,
we had
that idea back in October. We're like, oh, we should do something in December after the earnings reports come out and get people hyped about this and just show how this impacts their portfolios. Like, oh, well, management was off from their expectations, so that's negatively going to impact the stock. Mm-hmm. Or management did better than they anticipated, that's going to positively impact the stock. Like, okay, well, this is interesting how these reports come out and then the correlations that it has on the stock price or how people perceive it.
Well, and you also get to just, I mean, it's incredible how many financial education or financial literacy, like all in that, there's no like mentioning of money. It's like that's the coolest part of this. So like when you show an earnings report, it's like how many billions of dollars Netflix made this last month. I mean, that's what gets kids excited. I mean, it's kind of like, oh, invest and you're up 3%. It's like kind of big whoop. But if it's 3% on $10,000, it's like, wow. I mean, so it's really kind of there's so many dollars around earnings.
Right. And to that point, just using a Netflix analogy, it'll be like, oh, Netflix just released 5 different shows. And it's like, wow, I watched all of those. So how does that impact the company? And then you show them the earnings report and like, okay, now it translates to dollars. It's exactly. Like because it was positive reception, the company's going to do well. And then they start thinking like, okay, wait, so this is what really drives growth or really drives profitability for a company like that. And obviously that varies from company to company or industry to industry, but that's just like one example.
Mm-hmm. And it highlights the amount of education you have to do. Mm-hmm. You just can't invest in a stock and let it go. No. You've got to pay attention to these earnings reports every quarter.
Exactly. Well, and that's one of the best parts is that you have to read the news. So now you have to start being informed. So it goes beyond investing. Now it's just engage with what's around you instead of kind of losing time on Snapchat. You're kind of reading the news, trying to understand, okay, Westworld is coming out April 22nd. Mm-hmm. Like, and instead of just texting everyone saying, okay, when we're watching it, it's like, well, that's exciting. Like, and you go look at Netflix was up 2% that day. So it's like kind of just viewing the world through a financial lens. Mm-hmm.
This is kind of going to be an odd question for you, but have you ever seen anything like how Donald Trump is impacting the markets on a week-to-week basis?
What are your thoughts? We do these weekly blogs, and I always would write these different articles and pieces about like what Trump would say and come up with some crazy headlines. Up, the world didn't end, but Trump said some more crazy things. But you can really see how markets are impacted by his comments, which is crazy in itself. And it is a weird time to be investing, especially to have a competition like that, especially if he's saying things every week and then markets are reacting and markets responding to that. But at the same time, you have to understand that those short-term reactions are just like emotions, and it's not truly indicative of the company itself.
It was a little frustrating, though, when you're trying to find market events to do push notifications, and you're trying to figure out like unique stories, and it was the same.
Yeah, and for us watching the heartbeat line of the markets, when he says something, they go down, and in about an hour it's back up.
Yeah.
It is almost like a heartbeat, isn't it?
Exactly.
Where does the app go from here? What's the short-term, long-term future?
So the short terms, this summer we're working with a couple of high school groups and then also a group of 18 to 24-year-old college students. And so we're really trying to find, just get as much feedback as possible and to learn from our users. And, I mean, if high schoolers can start engaging with this, I mean, there's no reason college students shouldn't be too. And so we're using the summer to really improve the platform. And then September, we're hoping to do a $100,000 scholarship competition for the entire semester with schools in Chicago.
Right. Yes. And then the long-term goals are a national rollout, applying this model to other metropolitan cities in the nation. And like Brian said, college students too, because we feel that it's great to get high school students, but what's next? And if you can capture them then, you can stay along the ride. But that's why we're having these kind of case studies during the summer and really getting feedback from the people who are using it itself and asking, like, how can we improve this? What will make this better? What concepts do you want to see on here? Is this good? Is this bad? Just really just trying to flush it out so we can make the best product ultimately.
Well, and then also we really believe in this community approach. So that's why we kind of went into all of these schools. I mean, we visited probably 150 high schools in the past month. Wow. And we really want to package up what we've done here. And then, I mean, we can't be in all of these cities, but there's a lot of people who recognize the importance of financial literacy. There's a lot of banks who are kind of funding scholarships and kind of creating a model where kids our age, college students, could also be kind of helping to organize these events kind of around the country. Because, I mean, the long-term goal is that whenever a kid wants to learn about investing, there's a financial upside for them, because that's kind of the most exciting part about investing. No one wants to simulate with fake money and not win anything.
No, we all want to make money at some
point. Exactly.
And who do you think would be a good partner for that? Is it going to be an organization like the Federal Reserve? Is it going to be a private company?
I don't know if it's really one. I mean, the Federal Reserve's a great partner to have, and what they've been doing with Money Smart Week.
But I think for us, we're not trying to just be married to one.
I think the important thing is probably getting the financial institutions. We're hoping they step up and recognize that in a world with where so many people have debt and kind of interact with money, obviously, daily, that there is some obligation to teach them about that. But I think what's the most important part for making this app cool for kids is getting influencers and people who resonate with our students, kind of like, oh, well, okay, now I've got him talking about how he's investing. Like, I could be doing that too. Mm-hmm. That's kind of just making investing cool. I mean, because you're making money.
Yeah, why shouldn't it be? Exactly.
I mean, we really stress the importance of saving money, but what interest rate is a savings account paying?
Exactly. Yeah. we have conversations all the time about the 1% versus the 99%. Again, this may be pie in the sky, but do you think that what you're doing might bridge that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, totally. And especially after the month of April, we've been in many of the schools in Chicago. I don't want to say all, but we've been in a lot of them. And a lot of them are in some of those underserved communities that you see on the news and are
negative things, but we're essentially coming into these schools and telling these young people about our app itself and really just introducing the stock market to them. And at first, they're a little apprehensive and, you know, they don't really want to be there. They feel like it's something enforced. But by the end of our sessions, they're enamored and they're glued and they're asking all these questions. And it's just like, it's so interesting because these are those quote unquote students that no one knows how to connect with or engage with. And we're talking to them because we understand that a big important thing to young people is making money. And that's like part of the problem is some people don't know how to make money or know what to do when they get it. So once you break that down to them, they're interested and they're like, okay, wait, this is another way to overcome maybe my egregious circumstances. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty cool. And even like our top users are from some of those schools. And I think that's showing the success or the proof of concept of what we're doing. They were able to introduce something to these people who otherwise probably wouldn't get exposure to it. But now they're thinking about it.
Right.
And well, that is fascinating.
Well, and that's kind of one of the parts that so our nonprofit partner, UrbanX Learning, is an experiential learning nonprofit. And so their whole idea is that students need to see themselves in the workforce in order to get there. And so the idea of kind of bridging that gap is like, no, not every student that uses this app is going to go on to run a hedge fund or be in financial services. But kind of if you're learning about investing in Facebook, you're learning about data scientists and you're learning about all these jobs there and kind of how Facebook makes money. And so now you're learning about marketing. It's like you're able to see all the different pieces of a company and get exposure to the different career paths that are out there. And a lot of existing kind of traditional curriculums do a great job in teaching material, but don't really let the students' curiosity kind of and that excitement drive their learning.
And I think that's what hinders the learning almost.
Right.
Because if you don't see it, you're like, all right, well, this stops in the classroom.
Yeah.
And that's what we really want to extend it beyond the classroom. And the idea of creating this mobile app is that you can kind of the kids will, if they're excited about it, they're taking it home to their parents. And to go back to those like uncomfortable questions, it's like now you've got the parents talking to their kids and learning from them. And if we frame some sort of community outreach of like, hey, do you want to learn how to have your kid win the competition? Now we're able to start having that dialogue too.
I think also just, and again, I've just met you guys, but it seems to me that part of the selling point here would be you both. I mean, you look like the students that you're teaching. Mm-hmm. Right. Brian, you have your hat backwards. Miles, you're here in a pinstripe suit. I would sit and listen to both. I'm enthralled listening now to both of you. So that must be a selling point.
Yeah, and we do sometimes actually try to play off the one in a hoodie, one in a suit look.
It's a really interesting dynamic.
Well, and we kind of realize we never really thought of it this way until we started wearing Rapunzel gear into schools too. That and the kids are saying, "Hey, where can I buy that?" And mm-hmm. I was like, "No, buy stocks. Like, focus on this." Yeah. But kids do look at us kind of enamored and kind of like this. Oh, you're app developers. Like, this is really cool. And
we're thinking, like, well, we're not that much older than you, and
exactly.
We were literally just in your seat.
And but using it, if like, okay, you think this is cool? Like, well, this is what we built, and so. You kind of get kids hooked not even on the investment.
But nonetheless, we're able to build that rapport and that connection because we're relatable to a lot of young students.
Right.
They're like, wait, they're doing this and they're telling me about stock market? I can do this too. And that's the whole thing about
that
experiential learning and being able to visualize yourself in that other person's shoes. And I think we're doing a pretty good job at that so far.
We're trying,
And so let's make some money. I'm sure there's people listening out in the audience like, ask them a stock pick question. Ask him a stock pick question. What do you guys like right now?
I mean, it's a controversial one, but my biggest one that I'd say is Starbucks. Mm-hmm. And they've been in the media for some negative things that happen at one location. And I don't want to chalk that up to the company culture overall because I think that management responded in the best way possible and are truly trying to not just cover up the issue, but transform the culture of the company.
Yeah.
And because of that blip, their stock price may be suffering right now, but I think in the long term, you're going to see that rebound. And once again, that's kind of one of those emotional things and people responding and they're reacting to a negative headline. But senior management is great. Melody Hobson's on the board, and I know they're taking all the right steps mm-hmm. for it. So I think that's one of my favorite ones at the moment as far as watching that one.
Brian, do you have a favorite stock?
Oh, boy, I thought he was going with... Probably Rapunzel stock. We're hoping that one starts soaring.
It's not publicly traded, though.
No, I mean, but that's what we just kind of try and pull. I mean,
in the opposite direction when Snapchat started declining. That's one that, in going into high schools and seeing the apps that the next generation's using, I think that that would be the opposite, that it's when people are saying, oh, I don't like this new update. There's a lot of times in tech that that's an opportunity for buying. I don't know if I would give that endorsement, though, after talking with a lot of the kids and saying, hey, why don't you buy Snapchat? And they said, no, I'm buying Facebook. I was like, okay.
Facebook.
It's another good one.
Yeah.
Well, guys, best of luck to you both and to Rapunzel, and we're going to look forward to following this very closely.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Brian Curcio and Miles Gage are the co-founders of Rapunzel Investments, online at RapunzelInvestments.com. We're going to continue our conversation with Brian and Miles after the bell this morning, post our conversation with the podcast of the opening bell a little bit later on this morning at WGNRadio.com.
Hi, this is Catherine Davis with today's NO Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoNO.com. Chicago is introducing a dockless bike sharing program to 10 wards on the city's south side on May 1st for a six-month pilot program. About 50 bikes will be available between 79th and 138th Streets, Pulaski Road, and the Chicago Skyway. Bike sharing companies Pace and Lime Bike will be among the options Chicagoans can choose from. Boeing is reportedly in talks to acquire airplane parts maker KLX. KLX is a distributor of aircraft parts and oil and gas equipment, and it has a market value of $3.7 billion. Embracing Global, a membership organization for female entrepreneurs, is opening in Chicago. The St. Louis-based group offers women presidents, founders, and CEOs access to mentorship, networking, and other business resources. That's today's NO Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoNO.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. We're glad you're here with us for our Monday edition of The Opening Bell. A recent study found that about 37% of American adults don't have life insurance. And so May 2nd is National Life Insurance Day. Jason Hargraves is with us this morning, the managing editor at InsuranceQuotes.com. Jason, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Why do more people do not have life insurance? What's behind that number?
Well, I think the biggest factor is it's just not a very it's not a very happy topic. You know, if you're getting a car or a house, these are kind of grand ideas. You're thinking about insurance, your future. You're thinking about life insurance. Yeah, it's just not a happy connotation. It's going to be something, you're preparing your family and things like that. It's just not a happy topic. So people tend to want to put those off as long as possible, which is really a problem because the longer you put off something like life insurance, basically the more expensive it's going to be for you.
How big of a factor is cost of insurance and other priorities in life for this decision?
Yeah, people tend to put life insurance at the bottom of the list. You know, they're going to try to pay off some debt or buy a new car or something like that. So the cost in people's mind is a big factor. But you know, some of the studies we've done and some of other people in the business have shown people can overestimate the cost as much as 300%. So the reality is people are thinking it's costing a lot more money than it really is. And that's basically because there's so many options out there today that you can tailor a policy to fit your needs and your budget. So it's not just one policy fits all. So it's really a matter of shopping around and finding that policy that fits your needs and your budget, and it tends to be much less than people think.
Yeah, and also a little bit of misinformation, confusion, because I have to admit, I couldn't tell you what the difference is between, let's say, whole life and term life. I know that I have a life insurance policy, but I have no idea what it is.
Yeah, and those names can change by the insurance company at different providers, so that's really crazy, too. You don't really know because people use different terms, but the easiest way to remember it is a basic term life is for a set period of time. So you're going to get a payout for a 20-year period. And after that 20-year period, you can pay your premiums, but then there's no payout. So that's something you might want to do, like if you are buying a house, you want to make sure that for the life of that mortgage, if something happens, you know, you'll have money to pay for the rest of the mortgage. That's a set period of time. And that's their basic policy that most people are familiar with. Other policies have more of an investment side to it. You have universal policies. You have whole life. These policies actually add a cash value to it. So, yes, you have your insurance, and, yes, it's there when you need it. But you're also building up the cash value, and you can see it as an investment. So that's something that's a little more desirable to people who want to have a way to invest their money as well as having something there in case their family needs them if something happens to them. So those are the big differences. Term is basically for a set period of time, and then the policy has no value, or you have another policy where it's a variable or it's whole life, where you're getting a cash buildup and there is an investment element that you're going to get probably for payoff, even if you don't end up using it as an end-of-life benefit.
Yeah, the whole life, sometimes I think we hear from folks who have cashed out their life insurance policy. That would be a whole life policy, right?
Correct, exactly. A whole life or, like I said, universal, variable. They have some different names, but that's that. It's definitely not a term life. So you could definitely cash it out, or even as you go along, if you have one of those policies, it builds up cash. So, for instance, you may end up taking $2,000 out after 6 years, or it may be, and the value depends on how the company is investing your money. So it's going to vary. But, you know, you'll have a little bit of buildup as the years go by that you can always take out and use. So it does have that investment element, and that makes it a lot more attractive to people.
Yeah, and so give us a sense of that investment. Do most companies invest that in a good way where you actually see good return?
You know, it just depends. You don't have a lot of say in it. That's one thing that people tend not to to like, is it's going to be the insurer and what they tend to do with the money. So it just really depends on the market. It's all doing the investments that the insurance company does with it. So that's a real hard one to gauge. But the longer you have it with the company, the more the cash is going to build up. And insurance companies are very forthright. You can just go online and see any given day what your cash value is. And for many, the process is very simple to use that cash values. Just you can easily liquidate it online, or a simple call to your agent can help you with that. So it really varies, but usually the longer you have the policy, the more it's going to build up, as with anything.
How many insurance life companies are there to choose from? Are there a lot that would make this process confusing?
There are a lot, and I would always recommend the first thing to do if you do have insurance, home insurance, car insurance, always check with that agent first or that company, because they're going to be able to bundle your policies. So you're going to be able to get a discount. The more policies you have with a company, you're going to usually get a discount. So that's where your savings can come in. So if you do have another policy, call your agent, check with those folks first. But it's also a good time to check with other companies too, and just find out if you're getting the best rate on your other policies. So it's always a good time when you're getting life insurance just to double check everything you're getting. Because like I said, different companies will bundle. So there are lots of companies out there. But that's where you should always start, is if you have a company already you're using, you might get the best rate on there. But that's just a starting point. You can always call and around and get the best rate for what you need. And then again, just because you're bundling it doesn't mean you get the best savings. So it always helps to shop. I tell people that's always a really good place to start.
So National Life Insurance Day, I'm guessing this is a day to learn, to get the information, and to set a plan in action. Is that a fair way to describe it?
Well, we hope so. It doesn't sound the most festive day out there. But, yeah, that's basically it, to let people be aware of what's going on. And the fact, again, that's not as expensive as you think. And it's time to take like a financial assessment. It's just one of those days where it's a bit of a reminder to do a little financial checkup.
Is there an age or a time and place in your life station that is the key to doing this at that point?
Yeah, you know, people always talk about, is there ever an instance where you don't need life insurance? And the rule of thumb is basically, if you're not married or you don't have, dependents, if no one's really depending on you, your income, to support them, then some people say, well, it's not really, you don't really need it there because no one's depending on your income. However, what you don't realize is you may be 25 and no one's depending on your income now, but where will you be in 10 years? And so what I try to tell people is, think about where you're going to be in 10 years versus where you are now. If you do plan to have a spouse and you do plan to have children, then you want to go ahead and get in as early as possible because your rates are going to be as low as your age. So the younger you are, the healthier you are, which usually correlates, that's where you can get the cheapest rate, and you can lock that in and keep that in your entire life. So if you're young, it's always a good time to get involved. If you're older, retired, your kids are grown, you have enough cash value in your savings to cover your expenses, your spouse, and it would be super expensive at that point to get a policy, then maybe not. But I always think it's a great idea for someone in their 20s to start out to get that policy because you're going to get the best deal. And a lot of companies will offer life insurance as one of your benefits, and that's a great thing to have in addition. But what people don't sometimes calculate is that benefit goes away once you leave that job. So you have this benefit, but once you leave the job, it's gone. So you either then have to go out in the market and get one yourself, or you might get another job that has that benefit. But that's always something you got to think about. What you have now may not be the situation you're in 10 years from now. So you're always going to think ahead so you can get the best deal.
You know, I always feel for families who have that tragedy develop where they find out on the, you know, the day that that tragedy hits that there's no insurance. You don't want to be those people, do you?
No, no. And it's always something to talk about with your spouse and with your family members to know what policies you do have and where to find them. So that way you can get the process going immediately. And normally people, especially when you're starting out, you're looking at, you want something, you try to think of the income you're bringing in now, and it's usually somewhere between 5 and 10 times that amount. So obviously if you're just starting out in your 20s, you might want to get a policy about 10 times what you're making in a salary. As you've gone on in your career and you're making a lot more money, that may be, need to be just maybe 5% of that, but somewhere in there. But it's something you need to talk about because people need to know where to go for that policy if something does happen. And again, your spouse needs to know, and it's usually your spouse in these instances, exactly how much money you're going to have in case of an event. And again, it's not a pleasant topic. We get that. But, you know, it's also a necessary topic, so we try to stress that.
Yeah, it's one of those topics where you talk about it, get it done, and don't go back to it unless you absolutely have to.
Yeah, basically you celebrate National Life Insurance Day one day, and then you're done for the rest of your time. Just 1 year is all you have to do.
I love that. Jason, good information. We appreciate you being with us this morning.
Yeah, thank you.
Jason Hargraves is the managing editor of insurancequotes.com. Good information there. Insurancequotes.com will answer all of your questions. Actually, we've been on that site this morning. It's just lots of answers here. I had questions, too. So, very good stuff.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, we're looking for a positive open on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures are up 98 points. NASDAQ futures up about 32 points. Good for about 0.5%. S&P futures up 1/3. Now, the latest on agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. As we begin a new trading week, we look back to last Friday when we saw a strong rally in the soybean market with the July soybean contract gaining 17¼ cents. But traders said the gains basically because of strength in soybean meal. On the cash market, bids for soy meal shipped by barge to exporters at the Gulf firmed early on Friday, and premiums for soybean meal loaded on ocean-going vessels also strong. One trader, Dan Sikander, president of DC Analysis, said it is the meal leading the rally. There's just a feeling the drought in Argentina will cut back on their meal processing. That tightness has not been resolved. And so a lot of strength there. Corn market, we saw the July corn contract up 3¾ cents, but wheat was fairly strong as well, up 9 cents on the July contract. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Monday, April 30th. The Commerce Department releases its March report on personal income and spending. The National Association of Realtors releases its pending home sales index for March. We'll also get the Dallas Fed Manufacturing Survey and the Chicago PMI. It's another big day for earnings. McDonald's Corporation out there this morning, along with Kemper Corporation, Whiting Petroleum, and Rent-A-Center. As we look for the rest of the week, tomorrow earnings from Aetna, Apple, Merck, Pfizer, Snap. Also, the Fed meeting gets underway. CVS, Humana, Kraft Heinz on Wednesday. Then on Thursday, Cigna, Dow, DuPont, Kellogg. Friday, Alibaba, Newell Brands, Berkshire Hathaway kicks off its shareholder weekend. And the jobs report is coming on Friday. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Monday, April the 30th.